This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Red, yellow, red, red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. Beep, 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 beep. Nice. Doing my vocal warm-ups. We're a professional show.
Sabotage. Steve Raker here from the Comic Book Bunker with Kevin Whirlwind X, Phil, and Andrew the L.A. Rabbit. That's right, it's Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 350.
Oh, I remember some good 350 issues, but sadly, I can't bring up any of them on this podcast.
Indie comics don't go that high, not even Cerebus.
Walking Dead maybe one day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
It's kind of something, though. 350 episodes. You should just take a minute and be like, that's really an achievement.
Yeah, in 1 year. Whew.
It's just not our achievement. That's the only thing. We've been around a year, though, and that's worth celebrating. Next episode will be our Halloween one-year anniversary episode extrava spookaganza.
Spooky podcast.
And ironic that I'm not that big into Halloween. We should do like a Thanksgiving themed episode.
Ooh. Oh, we already missed Thanksgiving. Yep. Although I had turkey today.
Wrong country, you north of the border folk.
The harvest is when the harvest is.
This is the podcast that's sponsored by nobody. It's got a New Yorker, a former New Yorker, and two guys that live so far north of New York that it's a completely another country.
With a whole different Thanksgiving, apparently.
Yeah, who knew?
Well, you know, the rest of the world's just like, Thanksgiving? What?
We have health care.
Rub it in, Phil.
Speaking of rubbing it in, Andrew, let's hear the latest con report. You are so busy out there on the West Coast doing your thing, working your angles. What's up?
Well, we had the Long Beach Comic Book Show. And loyal listeners to Marvel Noise for the last few years will know that I, in a spirit of enthusiasm, bought the wife and myself lifetime passes to the show. At the time, it wasn't clear whether it was my lifetime or the show's lifetime, but it's still going strong. So I think I'm in the bonus round. I think they've paid for themselves, and it's all gravy. So I have these big, clear plastic badges I get to wear that say lifetime member.
How much was it for a lifetime?
I don't remember. I want to say maybe $200, $250, something like that.
Well, that's worth it for sure if you're still using it.
So, yeah, I figured, and part of it was also just the novelty of I'd never been a lifetime member of anything, and it seemed like kind of a cool, like, wow, who knows, maybe this
thing. That's a great reason to spend $200.
Yeah, you wanted a clear card.
Maybe, like, it someday, you know, this will be the next San Diego Comic-Con, and then I'll be like, oh, yeah, I don't have to pay anything, suckers, in your face, and I wave it in their face.
Sorry, Andrew. New York is the new San Diego Comic-Con. Its attendance actually surpassed San Diego this year. How about that?
Woo. Are you sure those are accurate attendance numbers, though? Because San Diego always seems bigger because it has an entire neighborhood. It's like it's more than the convention center.
Hey, as far as I'm concerned, New York can have it. I don't need – I never understood, like, the – wow, we get more people going. It doesn't
that's worse.
Increase the enjoyment of those of us there. I mean, good for them, but most of these shows now have reached a point where demand outstrips capacity. I mean, I know it's that way at San Diego. It sells out. New York sells out. All these shows, you know, there's just no room, to quote Harry Harrison's classic short story, which became Soylent Green.
It's made out of people.
Decaf is kind of like bulging, and then you have all these like off-site venues, so yeah, it's just, you know.
But I mean, I'm glad geeky goodness is around. But back to Long Beach. Exactly. Anyway, so it was the full 2 days, but I only went Saturday due to other time commitments. That being said, always it's one of my top shows because I like the neighborhood, although one of our favorite eateries closed, which we found out when we went to go for lunch and the place was empty and we're like, what happened? Yeah, that's always a shocking revelation when you get there. But they really have expanded the Artist Alley. And I think from talking to the vendors, it's like a decent show, but I don't think anybody's making money hand over fist with it. So they do bring in some creators. They brought in Jimmy and Amanda from Florida. That's Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor.
I'd love to meet them one day.
And a few other ones, but I think they're a great. If I was running a show, I would try and get them because they really know how to work the crowd. And every show I go to, I always see at least one Jimmy panel because he's really personable and has a lot of funny stories and is very engaging. And again, we went to a Jimmy panel that was pretty lightly attended, so it was really nice. And he just basically opened it up. And you could ask him questions, and he's super candid. I was asking him about kind of the business and how if he tracks his numbers and things like that. And he's like, I'm more on my numbers than my editors are. Like, I got to know because I got to know, you know, if the book's going to get canceled or what's going on or how to work out. And I know he's also very active on social media. And I just like that he makes an effort to connect. I mean, at the end of the day, the art's going to be what it is. But making that connection and being open to the fans only generates goodwill.
So did anyone ask him about the Jonah Hex movie, or was that years ago? Someone probably asked him.
Well, they did ask, and he said, actually, strangely enough, it hurt. It really killed the comic because all the bookstore returns was a bad, you know, down here back in that day. I mean, now most bookstores are out of business, but back then, bookstores were still around, and they bulked up in anticipation of the movie, and because the movie was such a turkey, it ended up, you know, they ended up returning all those trades they ordered. So it's an instance where the movie actually had a negative effect on the success of the comic book. But he said he was pretty sad. Like, he'd like to write more, but if he never got to do any more, he had a really long run, because obviously it stretches back to before the New 52 business.
Yeah, he had a good run for sure.
And he really got to say a lot with the character. So I went to his panel. We also went Travis Hansen. He's an artist. He does the Bean series and does these elaborate sort of prints that have, you know, teddy bears and imaginative landscapes. He does a lot of Kickstarters. He's another one that's just a machine with the Kickstarter and has a good base of people and just kicks it out. And he also tours a lot. I've seen him up. He goes as far up north as Emerald City, out to Arizona, Denver. I don't know if he crosses all the way over the Mississippi, but a lot of the shows around here, he's just a road dog. And he had an open one about his newest book. We backed the Kickstarter, so he had a model there. The books hadn't come in yet, but he had the proof that he was showing us. And he taught us all how to draw teddy bears, which was kind of fun. I was like getting them little drawing lessons, even though I'm not any good with it. And then I went partially to an Archie panel, but I was less than thrilled because the people they had were kind of equivocating. And I hate that, like, you're in a small show, like, answer questions. Even the banal kind of simple questions like Betty or Veronica, and they both punted. And that just kind of pissed me off. I'm like, oh, come on, man. Like, what, are you going to get fired if you pick one? It just was that kind of felt like a managed panel. Like, you gotta say what you feel, man.
Pick one. I bet you if you went to their horror line panel, it'd be much better.
That might have been, but it was like that was the next day. They had Roberto Aguilar Sikorsky, the guy that writes a lot of those. But he was there on Sunday, and I wasn't there. So I also went to an Image Comics panel that was pretty fun. A lot of those
what
people.
What was that about?
Oh, that was just a lot about the creators are talking about managing their own books and their own brand, because most of them had also worked for the big two. They had the Higgins, he does Cowl, but he also has done a lot of DC work. They had Gabriel Hardman and Karina Bechko were there. and just a few other people talking about sort of how they manage and handle their properties and the different, and there were a lot of questions. I got there by the question and answer time. So it was a lot of like the differences between working for Big Two versus working for yourself. Mm-hmm. And they're all, and so that was kind of good. And CBR had someone there who was monitoring moderating the panels. So that was interesting. And then on the floor, Man of Action was there, so I got my Godland Celestial Edition signed, and I told him how much I was a big fan of his work, and I also brought my Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers.
Nice.
Major Victory. So I brought him that to sign, and he was a very nice gentleman. And the Madame Frankenstein team was there, Megan Levins and Jamie Rich, so I bought, they had the new issue there, so I bought that. And then I also got her to do me a drawing of Madame Frankenstein. So that was the only piece of artwork. And then I wandered the aisles and bought, I don't know, you know, maybe 10, 12 issues from self-published people. And I was thinking about maybe what I should do is, this is going to sound pretty bad, but can we talk for a minute about self-published comics?
Do it up.
Or else are we going to talk about self-published comics?
That's what we're okay. Here for.
I'm just one fucking dude who buys self-published comics at times. But there's a couple of things that really help.
Benny.
One is your cover. I ended up buying a bunch of stuff from this guy, all because one of the books had a really eye-catching cover. So spend as much time as you can on that thing. And really knock it out of the park. I mean, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of inevitable letdown sometimes when the cover is so much nicer than what's inside the book, but it is completely worth it. There's a comic store here, Comic Bug. And like a lot of the comic stores here, they also do a collective, so they were publishing stuff. And it was an anthology called Briefs. And the artist, Gilliam March, did the cover. It's this female superhero lady, and she's just trying on, like holding up an outfit in front of her,
yeah,
and it's called
Fruits.
And it was just, I don't know, something about the cover just completely caught my eye and dragged me, you know, and then I ended up, from the guy that was there, I bought a couple of his books, too. Because, you know, with those collectives, a lot of times it's only manned by one or two people, but they're selling everybody's books. And I guess they work in shifts or whatever. I always enjoy that at the con. I like to see those little companies together. So, and then the other thing I got to say is your lettering. I know that there's a temptation to kind of use unusual fonts or whatever, but it may look great on the Cintiq, but after it gets sent by Kablam or whatever crappy Chinese printing company you're using, sometimes it's going to be difficult to read, and that can be a real barrier to your comic. I particularly want to warn people about, I know it looks awesome when you have the black pages, but all black and the printing processes, they just don't look good, and the printing comes off kind of rough on them. And this doesn't happen all the time, but maybe about a quarter of the time or something. And like I said, you just don't need that hit. And I know black pages are awesome, and you want to have like some cool colored lettering on top. But for me personally, I don't know if you guys run into this. Anytime it can create some, like, I'm got to really stare and figure out what the words are.
I have that all the time. I have an Italian series I'm trying to read right now, and the print is just awful.
Yeah, in the 90s when the Big Two were experimenting with their colors and stuff, boy, it really, those letter pages really took a dive.
Yeah, so those, and then the other thing is, and this happens rarely too, maybe if you're a solo guy, have someone look at your thumbnails. Because maybe in about a quarter of the books I read, there's going to be some sequence that just is not clear what happened. And I know it's because a lot of you, and no, this isn't for people. I know there's people in the Artist Alley that work for the Big Two and do all that stuff, and they've been around the block and they know. But particularly for younger guys, have someone just look over your thumbnails, because I'm going to say, okay, even if half of it's on me, that means like at least an eighth of the time there's some unclear segment in your book, and that's another thing that can derail it. But I don't want to be down. I mean, obviously I'm continue to and will always buy self-published books and find a lot of great stuff. I bought the second issue of Man vs. Rock, which I bought the first issue at Kamikaze, so I liked this stuff enough I went back. But I just thought a few words to the people. I mean, I'm just some schmo who buys comics, but likely I'm in the minority, and I got a feeling a lot of the people at the shows probably don't buy a lot of self-published books. So for what it's worth,
those the are pages are too black.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure it looks great on your you know, they're looking at it on their monitor.
Yep.
They don't think about it's got to get printed by somebody, and probably somebody who doesn't care, or you're, you know, paying whatever price you paid or things like that. So I just wanted to warn people, think of, now if you're going all digital or whatever, that's fine too. But this is just for the guy that paid his couple $100, has his table, and is trying to move copies of his Super Duper Man meets the Awesome Incredible Toaster Eater number two, you know?
Couple of couple of best moments of the con? Favorite moments of the weekend?
For me, it's also seeing people. I'm meeting up with a lot of friends that I went. The Jimmy panel was probably the top panel I went to and had the most fun. And it was great meeting the Madame Frankenstein crew and getting that sketch. I think it's the artist. I think she's pretty new to sequential work. That might be her first comic. So it's cool to kind of get in on the ground floor with someone whose work I really liked.
Nice.
But that's too much talking for me. Boo. Get someone else in on this.
So what? We like hearing you talk. I hope everyone else does too.
I just finished, I got to get this off my chest because I just finished it like an hour before the show we're recording here, is I finished up the seventh and final issue of Garth Ennis's Avatar book, Caliban. And like I said, written by Ennis. The art is by Facundo Percio, or Percio, and inks by Sebastian Cabral. And I didn't find the art in any way to be a hindrance to the storytelling, as you know, is sometimes the knock on Avatar as the publisher. And the story was intriguing enough. It tied right into my love of the original Alien movie, where before it seemed like if you had six bullets in a gun, you could kill six aliens. But when it seemed like there was just one thing that was just so far adapted beyond our ability to stay one step ahead of it and understand it, and by then you're dead. it's a story of two ships colliding in hyperspace, one of humans from Earth and the other completely alien. And you know how in the original Alien movie there was one crew member who was an android or robotic, and he ended up sort of sympathizing with the alien creature, or at least wanting to preserve it because of you know, being so wowed by the organism itself, and because of that he ended up sort of helping it along the way. He tried to stuff the newspaper down Ripley's mouth. They kind of go off on that angle of this alien story, and one of the crew members sort of becomes possessed and by an alien force, and then, you know, systematically goes after the rest of the crew, and it's about the rest of the crew fending him off, figuring him out, and trying to fight back, and seeing how it all ends up.
One thing I didn't like, though, was his design. I thought it was a little goofy looking.
It was symbolic of metamorphosis, and had the is like an amalgamation of all alien parts. Not to give too much of the plot itself away, since it's such a new book, but there were definitely some butterfly wings going on there, huh?
It wasn't even that. It was before that even. I just think maybe some of the colors, if they changed it, I would have liked it more. But I thought it had a really strong start, and then as it went on, I wasn't as interested, but I did like it overall. Because like you, I love alien stories, and anything Avatar I usually pick up.
This had a small enough cast, too, that I felt like stepping... It wasn't going to be too much of an investment to step in and try to follow the characters, especially as they're, you know, kind of dying off. By the time you're down to the cast of, you know, four or five and then less and less, by then you kind of know those characters' names. So you didn't have to slow down in the beginning and try to, like, make sure you had everybody straight because you knew the cast was kind of get whittled down.
Yeah. I found, too, if they didn't go with that monster guy route, this could have been a really cool comic in other ways, too. Like, if they went more with the alien-type stuff with the other ship they crashed into, there could have been a lot of cool mysteries, and they could have kept it going for a while.
One of my favorite novel series is Arthur C. Clarke, who did the 2001 stuff. He also wrote a series around exploring an alien vessel called Rama. The first one was Rendezvous with Rama, and then he did a sequel trilogy. So there was three books after that, and then that got into all like what the whole thing actually was behind it and everything, which was just fantastic. But this tickles me in sort of that same kind of a way where you're just exploring something alien. And like you said, I sort of wish that they had spent more time mapping out the other vessel and how it works and what the deal is with it. But
Because there's, definitely a lot of cool mysteries they could have done.
But they're busy getting chased and killed, so not a lot of time to stop and smell the flowers.
Nope, but it's always good to get a good space comic, because they're not as often these days. Or now they're starting to come back now, but which is good.
Kevin, what do you got?
I watched the Scooby-Doo and Mystery Incorporated cartoon, because I thought we were supposed to do Halloween
stuff.
Isn't
that DC?
It's TV.
What? That doesn't count?
All the Scooby-Doo relaunches, that one's the most palatable for sure.
It's like the ultimate version.
How about a comic?
A comic. Well, keeping with the Halloween thing, I read Hector Plasm. Anyone know of this? Probably not.
No. What is Hector Plasm?
It's written by Benito Sereno and art by Nate Belgrade. It's kind of this, I guess in the, you know, a lot of these things where they're just like mystery hunters or, you know, something like that where they're like born a certain way and then they can see ghosts. That type of thing. But it's, I didn't realize it was going to be like an anthology type of thing where it's like a lot of stories about him. But the adventures are sometimes like 2 pages or like 10 pages. It was a 48-page issue. I think it's maybe came out in like 2005 or something like that. But listening to another podcast, you know, I became aware of this, and I'm like, oh, I think I want to check this out. So they have like some, I guess it's in varying in how much you'll be interested in each story, but I enjoyed all of them. But, like, yeah, one of them, he's, like, he's seen ghosts. Another one, this guy, like, he needs his help, and is like, oh, I don't know, there's, like, hauntings and stuff. And he's like, let me check out your place. Oh, you got to move your trailer, like 100 yards. Or it's just weird stories sometimes about what's going on. And then they get into his whole origin. It's like, I guess, kind of weird. Weird birth. Well, it goes into some pregnancy stuff, and then, I don't know, in comics, they always get into the stuff, and you're like, well, what kind of, like, out-of-the-ordinary thing are they going to come up with here? So, you know, like, something that doesn't happen all the time, so they're just, so that sort of, like, creates the whole thing. And then he gets trained by, like, a ghost on how to do things, and he can see what's going on. So then he helps people out. And there's just a lot of cool adventures. Like, he meets a lot of guys. You see, it's not really him in his youth, but at one time he loses, like, 10 years of his life in, like, a few seconds because something doesn't go right on one of his missions. But he like, this one guy he meets, like, his part of like a museum or something, and he's like, oh, I have all this stuff. And then he inherits all this stuff from this guy, so he doesn't really have to work after that. He can just go around and solving stuff. He doesn't really have to worry about the whole money thing. So then he ends up even in like Niagara Falls, Canada, and he's like, oh, I want to go see this like mummy museum thing type of that thing that's going on there, and like the mummy comes to life and everything. So it's just all these like cool one-offs type of things. Like nothing really continues for that much longer. And there's one more issue that came out, I think a few years later that I think I'll get at some point, because these were kind of cool adventures. Like it kind of reminds me of some other comics where they're like, how much can we condense or compress a story? Like instead of having it be like 30 or 60 or 90 pages, it's like 2 pages or something, which is a lot more challenging, I think, to tell a complete story in.
How's the art?
It kind of varies a little bit. Like it's not really realistic, but I think there's a bit of a more of a cartoonish type of thing going on with some of the crazy monsters and everything. And the lettering looks like it might be hand lettered. I don't know. It looks a little off. Because at the lettering at the beginning, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to like read this on the computer screen the way it is, because it's a little, it's not shaky, it just looks like I need to zoom in, because it's not all uniform. But yeah, I sort of get used to it, and I think it sort of gets better as you progress through the issue.
This is the all lettering episode.
Apparently, where we get really deep into craft and everything. It's just weird. He's like fighting a cat at some point, a ghost cat. And like he's carrying someone around and they're like, I'm going to die. I'm dead. I need a doctor. I've been like it's like their ghost is bleeding and their ghost has come out of their body. And the guy's like, no, you don't need a doctor. It's going to be okay. It's going to be cool. I just got to defeat this cat and all this stuff. So it kind of has a funny sense of humor at times. And it's just kind of neat. And the guy has spiky black hair. It has a lot going
Sold.
On. Well, I'm just thinking like Dragon Ball, where they, you know, sometimes they had the weird hair type of thing going on.
Yeah.
That's he sort of has that hair going
oh,
on.
Oh, no. It's not sold.
So it's just little things like that. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of neat.
All right, Andrew, you're sweating with controversy tonight after your self-publishing Black Pages comments earlier.
He's all fired up tonight.
My heretical slam on the poor artists trying to express themselves.
What else you got?
Well,
that will divide us and conquer us.
So I was on this message board somewhere in the world, and they were talking about kind of science and comics and everything, and they mentioned this one, so I tried it out. Philippe Squarzoni, Climate Changed, A Personal Journey Through the Science. Mm-hmm. So I was like, and this was the winner of the jury prize, the 2012 Lyon Graphic Novel Festival. And I think I'm joining those people that think the word graphic novel should be retired. It just adds pretentiousness to it.
What are we going to name ourselves, though? Because we can't use the word comic book.
Just comic book. And that's part of my, like, so I'm like, all right, I need to learn something. I'm ignorant of lots of stuff. I'm all into learning about the climate and everything. But I really was distanced, first of all, by his artwork is what I politely call that kind of, basically the rotoscoping equivalent. And I find it's very disturbing. Like, it's just not enough comic book. You know what I mean? It looks like it's basically like if you have that filter that turns, you know how there's that filter on new phones that can make it look like a drawing?
Yeah.
Well, that's what this looks like. And that's the entire book.
So we sort of had more of a story or a point of view we wanted to get out than a comic book in them necessarily.
That too. And I don't care that it's polemical. Like that's fine, but I wanted a comic book, and this is like the comic book elements in this are sort of the worst excesses of navel gazing. So the science part's fine, but then it's these breaks where he's like walking in the woods and like, what's my role in all this? And I'm just like, this is why people hate, this is why other comic book people hate these types of comics. You know, the kind of worst excesses of the autobiographical genre, which is one I heap a lot of scorn on. I know that's the one that gets all the awards, like, oh my God, everyone's so honest and they talk about how they feel. And I think that's just the some of the worst parts of comics. But that's what wins
I'm
the
with
award.
You, Andrew, totally.
And so the science parts, I don't have it, but it's just all the like, now it's me and my wife. And like, should I go to this conference? Well, I'll have to fly there. And I don't go to this one, but I go to this one. And what is that? And it's like, dude, nobody, I would have been much happier if they just cut this book in half and he's just like, okay, I talked to these scientists and here's what they said, because those parts are interesting. I mean, he definitely has his angle, because he, like, it starts off with all the doom and gloom, and then like at the end he's like, okay, but it's still not too late, there's still these different options. And it's not him, it's he interviews, and he talks about who he interviews and seems to document his sources quite well, which I like. And I guess that's the advantage of his art style, is I assume these people really look like this. But I don't really like the backgrounds and everything. And I don't know, maybe he didn't freehand all this stuff. But too much of it looks just like, particularly there'll be objects and stuff in the page. And those look directly like that. And I just, I know that's really popular. And this is if you want to win awards and everything, you make it look really straight. You know what I mean? But, dude, it's a freaking, this felt like a documentary. Like this guy wanted to make a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But he makes comic books instead. So that's what he made. And it's like, dude, you want to make a comic book about this? Make it a comic. Like, do all kinds of comic book stuff. Don't, like, there's all sections of it that are literally talking heads when he interviews these dudes. Like, that's how you chose to, that's why it feels like this guy just wanted to make a documentary, but he makes comic, and that's not a comic to me. And also, it feels like he completely sidesteps any discussion of population, which seems to me like if you're looking at an issue that's got to, I don't know the science, but population has to figure into it somehow, right? I mean, some of this has to be
supply
the result
demand.
That there's like 8 billion people on the, well, no, there's what, over 7 billion now? I remember when there were 6. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's clearly, like, if population curve continues, that seems, it would seem to increase demand on the system. And that's was sort of punted on. And I think that's because it's kind of, you start talking about that and you start getting the eugenics label and then people start, you know, burning your books instead of reading them. Well, I understand, but I feel like it's, look, it's a tough thing to talk about, but you're tackling a difficult subject. Isn't that what you need to talk about? Does that make sense?
It does.
Am I being... to, I mean, but like, no. I said, the science part was cool.
I remember seeing this solicited, this graphic novel, and considered it, but ended up passing. I was worried about the art, so I'm glad I did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can tell right from the cover. Like, that's the section in the middle where it's the picture of him and his computer. Like, that's what the art looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So you were good. And also, that's a lot of it is just talking heads and stuff like that. Like, that to me, I mean, I know the person cited this as good science in comics. To me, it's not interesting comics.
I'm just surprised that you have weather down there in LA at all to relate to.
Well, I'm very concerned, obviously concerned about the global, if there is climate change, because it is way too hot for October. But anyways, let's punt this over to Phil. I'm sure he doesn't have something as serious. Like, I feel like I'm really bogging us down with heavy stuff, man. It's all
heavy.
You're
educating us. Another educational book by you.
We're edutainment now.
Phil, how about we go from harsh reality to complete unreality with the sure. Little Nemo Return to Slumberland book?
Yes, that sounds great. By Eric Schanauer?
Yep, Schanauer. And Gabriel Rodriguez.
Yes, one of my favorite artists for sure, who did Lock and Key.
I have not read Lock and Key at all, but I remember Chris Niesman just loved it so much. And I keep hearing such nice things about it, and now after seeing Rodriguez's art here, I think I'm going to have to read that.
It's even better in Lock and Key. And wow. You should totally get the hardcover box set. It's worth it.
Should I balance out your expectations, Steve?
Go for it. Push me through the door.
I don't know. I think people oversold Lock and Key.
Oh, is it because they weren't Japanese?
I only read Japanese stuff now? What?
All right, come on. IDW.
Kevin doesn't like scary like horror stuff. So. Yes, Little Nemo. Totally different from a horror comic.
Return to Slumberland. I'm a big fan of psychedelic comic books, underground comic books, and Winsor McKay, who did the original Little Nemo strips, was certainly a pioneer in modern psychedelics without even knowing it almost 100 years before LSD would even be invented. Mm-hmm. And his strips were enormous. Open up the newspaper and it would take both top to bottom of the newspaper. And he was ingenious with panel design and page layout and really trippy images, all about a kiddo who would be transported to, dreamland, and the adventure would end when he woke up. There's been a big push in resurgence in appreciating Little Nemo of late, it seems, in recent years. And here we have IDW publishing this Return to Slumberland, which totally is like a Little Nemo Next Generation, isn't it?
Exactly. That's one of the things I loved about it, is it continues the story. It's not a reboot or anything.
And you don't have to know what the deal is. They set you right up for it to be a fresh new thing, yet it refers to something else that you know was big and had history and meaning at the same time. But it doesn't weigh you down with that, which is really cool. And how they go about doing that is that Her Majesty, the Princess of Slumberland, needs a playmate. And everyone, including her, was really fond of Little Nemo back in the day, all those years ago. So they choose his descendant, James Nemo Summerton, to be the new playmate. And they send various agents out to try to bring him in. And he's reluctant, and he keeps waking up and kind of ruining them getting him to Neverland, or not Neverland, Slumberland. And they eventually do get there. And again, with the history of this property being built around McKay's panel design and page layout, Gabriel Rodriguez totally picks up the torch and does his thing. We've got the slanting bed and slanting panels, so it's like going down the ramp of the two-page panel spread and just all the fun stuff that only comic books can do.
Yeah, any of his work you pick up, you'll enjoy, I guarantee.
Excellent.
Do you remember that game by Capcom called Little Nemo and the Dream Master?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite games.
Not at all. Completely passing by.
That's kind of interesting. Came out in like 1990.
That's what got me into Little Nemo.
Ah, interesting. Because it was like based on like a film that's based on the comic strip. So it's like two times removed. But the
I started reading the comic strip after that.
Rediscovered him. I had seen some of this stuff as a youth, but rediscovered it as an adult by meeting Jeremy Bastion at a con several years ago and buying a Nemo in Slumberland print that he did. And since then, I've gone back and checked out some of the stuff. And just recently going to Baltimore and Boston, talked to Bastion there, and also there is a Kickstarter book that is finally should be hitting the shelves and hitting our front stoops via the mail, like kind of any time between now and Halloween. And it's the Little Nemo Dream a Little Dream, and it's just going to be this big, giant, oversized tribute to McKay and to Nemo. And they got all different artists to each like contribute pages. And from, Bastion himself to Gerhard, the guy who used to do the backgrounds for Dave Sim on Cerebus, but has his own artistic excellence as well. And I saw a copy of it before release in Baltimore at Dennis Kitchen's table, because the guys who published it and did the whole project were showing it to Kitchen and showing him his page in it. And I was just like, hey, I'm a backer. Can I, like, look over your shoulder and totally check this out? And they're like, yeah. And I spent, like, 20 minutes there with them paging through it. And, man, this is going to be fantastic. And fits right into the vibe of this Return to Slumberland, where it just really is all these modern artists doing their McKay thing. And it's awesome.
Yeah, I really want that. I hope it's easy for me to get after it comes out.
Check Amazon and stuff. It should be hitting regular outlets right if it hasn't already. It should be any time now.
Okay, so it might show up in my shop then.
I would think so. I know they weren't just going to kickstart it, that's for sure. Yeah, so Nemo's definitely a big thumbs up, didn't you think so?
And kid friendly too, if you want to read it to your kids.
Definitely.
Yep. A little wordy for them if they're young, but
no more wordy than the Wizard of Oz.
No.
Kevin, give us another one.
Oh, should I dig back into the Valiant pool here?
Hey, we're all Valiant lovers now, right?
Steve will be one day once we brainwash him.
I never thought I would be, but I am now. You're coming over, Steve.
I think Phil meant that in the sense of a descriptor.
I'm not opposed to the idea. I'm sure they're great, but there's to get into a whole another decades old publishing universe. No thanks.
It's
only 2 years.
That's what I used to say.
2 years wasn't enough, apparently, for me, Steve. I'm like, oh, it's a new universe. Well, that's not confusing enough. So I had to dig back to the original universe because apparently, you know, I need multiple versions of characters to juggle at the same time because, you know, if things are too simple, I'm just like, oh.
And you're like me. You need to know the history.
Yeah, so I have some of the digital issues from, like, the Valiant from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have one of the old Valiant trades for, like, Exo Manowar. It's the first 4 issues. So I'm, like, reading this, comparing it to, like, the new stuff. And it's interesting how they go about it, because I wouldn't say the new stuff was, like, decompressed or anything, but they just make different choices. Like, this one starts off with Ulrich here, and he's, like, on the spider alien's ship here, and they don't really go into the armor or him on the ship that much, and the present series, like, spends several issues on that. This is just, like, oh, yeah, he escaped, and now he's on Earth. Have fun. So it's just kind of crazy. Like, this still has some of the same similar themes and stuff, and some of the same characters, but I'm just like, yeah, that's kind of weird how some of these things turn out. Like, he keeps on going after these spider alien dudes and calling upon his armor, and then he gets, like, in charge of this company, but he has also this one person that helped him along. So they're, like, in charge of this company, because obviously, like, he can't run a company. Like, he's, like, time displaced and messed up, and he keeps on, he's trying to learn the language, too. He's just always he's like, whenever someone has a gun or some type of, like, power he can't understand, he calls them a wizard, like a wizard. And he's just like, oh, man, there's too many wizards in this city. And, like, all the skyscrapers are, like, castles and everything to him. But the Exo armor is trying to teach him stuff as it goes along. Because I'm like, how many issues are they going to have him just, like, stumbling around with, like, broken English and everything? Like, I'm kind of cool with that, but you kind of wonder, like, after a while if that would be, yeah, okay, he should have learned something. But then, you know, sometimes learning language isn't so easy. So, but yeah, he becomes a sort of like the, you know, would he be the co-CEO or, like, the CFO? I don't know. Whatever the title is. Because he has his friend, like, sort of run the company. And his friend sort of has, like, ideas of what he can do with the armor. So he always thinks of betraying Exo. And then I'm like, it's never going to work out well. It's never going to work out. And it doesn't work out well for anybody. Because he's, like, bringing, like, someone tries to mug him or something, and then he's like, chopping their heads off and bringing them to the office. And he's just like, hey, I just killed some people outside in the alleyway there. And then his friend's like, whoa, you can't be doing this in modern society. And then you run into some funny scenarios, too, where he's like, I can smell the fear on this guy. This guy has urinated. He has a yellow stain of fear all over him. So very funny, but very enjoyable. So I'm like, I should have been reading this back in the day, but I guess I was too young or something to, and I was too much of a Marvel zombie.
You might just have bladder issues. Like, sometimes it can be that way. It's not like fear. It's just, you know, your prostate could be having trouble.
Well, the thing is, you think you can...
I have this friend.
Well, someone creates an armor, sort of like the XO armor. See, this is why the guy has this problem. So he thinks, oh, if I can get rid of the armor, then I can defeat this dude because he's not very smart. He doesn't really know how to use the armor or anything. But, like, he's a warrior outside of the armor, so right. That's not really going to work out. Right, so the guy is just totally freaked out that even outside of the armor, he's still, like, this massive warrior. And that's when, you know, he has to go and expand.
But I'm just saying that they sell an awful lot of adult diapers, and it's not because everyone's afraid, you know.
Some call those diapers armor.
Well, you know, if you need to drink a lot of beer, and if you pay,
you might need a little armor.
You have to go to the bathroom, so if you can, you know, you got to make it go as long as you can, and you don't, and then leave the premises in your diaper, so you don't have to pay for the
armor,
beer.
Armor, not diaper.
Well, they also got them stadium buddies that you can strap on to your leg, too, if that's a concern. Well, them astronauts, it ain't like, you know, they got a whiz and a little contraption. It ain't like they can just hit the urinal.
That tang goes right through you.
A simplistic way to look at it.
This trade also has, like, pinups in between the issues of, like, it seems like maybe issue 50 or like later on iterations of Exo Manowar 2 that you can check out. And in the middle, they even have like a class of 93 thing, and they have like a guide to all the characters. So I'm like trying to match them up, and there's like a dinosaur eating a building and everything. I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. And the other classic Valiant I read was Shadow Man. I don't know what it is about Shadow Man. Like, even the new version, like right away, I'm just there. I'm like, oh, yeah, some guy, you know, just gets some kind of weird, crazy spirit or whatever inside himself, and he has to go fight whatever. I'm just, like, totally down with that concept for some reason. So, yeah, this is in, like, I think in New Orleans. And it's hard to describe it. Like, he's not like a superhero. Not that any of them are really like a superhero in the Valiant universe, but it's so weird. He doesn't even realize that he's doing anything out of the ordinary when he... Because he's like a jazz player at a club, and then some ladies are interested in him, and then somehow he gets his power, and then he just has weird reactions to things. Because then he's like, oh, it's getting dark. I might as well go outside. Oh, there's someone being robbed. I'm going to stop this robber. I don't know why this is going on. Oh, I'll just go back home. Oh, daylight's coming. I feel really tired. I'm going to go to sleep. And, like, some of the issues are just like, that's how the issue is written. And I'm like, this is hilarious, but this is awesome. So he's going after, like, weird voodoo spirits or, like, axe murderers, and I'm just like, somehow this really connects with me, and I don't know what that means. And then he goes to the doctor, and he's like, yeah, there's something wrong with me. And the doctor's like, no, you're fine. He's like, I don't sleep, I don't eat well, but I'm in perfect health. Don't you find that disturbing? And the doctor's like, it's, you know, you should be happy that you're in good shape. You shouldn't be freaking out. And then he picks up, like, the Shadow Man mask. He just happens to see a Mardi Gras mask on the ground, and he just picks it up, going, oh, yeah, I guess someone just left us here. I'll just take it with me. And then he uses that as his mask. I'm like, this is just hilarious. This is just awesome. And then he has some cop buddies and everything, too. And he helps people at night.
I want to tell Kevin, I picked up a 9.6 CGC Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers number 7.
Nice.
It's got a really cool Kirby cover with Captain Victory looking out and like the Kirby creatures coming out. And then there's art on the back cover too. And it's got the heroes and then a little, then one of the lion men. And then it's got a little tiny alien guy saying aliens are people too. But anyways, I picked this up. Lately, I've been buying CGC books on a whim, just cheap ones, because I'm weird. But anyways, I picked this one up, and like it's got such a great cover. It is now the one I display. I was displaying an old Amazing Spider-Man from the 200s, but now it's going to be Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers.
Nice.
I guess I shouldn't be some surprised with some of these Valiant books, though, because you have Engelhardt, Shooter, and Lapham, and, you know, quality guys.
Indeed.
Well, I want to give a quick shout out to my man Dan Smith. I picked up his the 4, 5, and 6 of Armageddon Hell. I have not gotten to them, but if you ever see Dan, he's a really great artist. Always has funny stuff, little pins and sketch cards, and he did one for his sketchbook. He always has the blank covers, and he did I'm Batman and I Am Groot on the same cover. That was funny. Lisa liked it, so we gave it to her. But I'm going to talk about the one I briefly mentioned, Man vs. Rock, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Hate the Rocks, Volume 2. You may remember, I don't remember if I discussed Volume 1, but I think I did on our from Kamikaze last year. But this is basically like taking 80s action movies and setting them, but the villain are rocks. And it's rogue geologist Buck Stone, who knows that the rocks are going to attack mankind. And he's the only one that can save us. And he's a typical action hero. And Vivian is his ex-girlfriend, who now is the vice president. And she's always, you know, very buxom and in a state of undress half the time. And then the president has a balls like for a chin and a very penis looking nose, which should tell you the sophisticated nature of the humor in it. But for some reason,
got you, you like the,
if you like those silly kind of movies, like it strikes right on it. Like he calls the vice president his ex-wife, and she's like, "How did you get my number?" He's like, "I'm a geologist, goddammit. I have connections you cannot begin to understand." And it's that kind of just ridiculous. And I like sort of the exaggerated line work. It's black and white of the story. And I'm like, you know, it's a little bit more expensive. It's a thicker issue. It's quite a big guy. So it's going to cost you, I think they were like $4 or $5, but it was totally worth it. I'll get the third one. There's something good about having just a silly comic that kind of makes you laugh and is totally ridiculous. And it's filled with those sorts of little humorous bits. But I also got that, like I said, in the Briefs book I picked up due to the cover. I do in, like, it's an anthology book. And again, they had some funny stuff in there. I don't know if I was just in the mood, but there's an interesting one where a guy tries to become a sidekick, but his outfit is not the correct outfit in Kid Metal. Well, anyways, as with the anthologies, I don't want to say much because telling the story kind of spoils it, but get out there, people. Go wander Artist Alley and buy some random small press crap. You'll have a good time. But thus endeth the sermon.
Bill, rebuttal?
Yes. I have one that was really intense. It was the second volume of Sheltered. I covered it once before. It's about the Doom Preppers. It's like a town of Doomsday Preppers. And all the kids kill off the parents so that way they can have all the resources for themselves because the Super Bowl game is going to explode. That's not a spoiler.
That was
the first issue. Hey, I don't care. And so the second volume is amazing. This would make such a good movie or TV show. The first issue,
Phil,
opens,
you and I, we talked about the first volume a little bit, or at least the first issue.
Very early in our run of indie episodes, yeah. And so this first volume is really cool because it opens up with this guy who delivers solar panels and things like that. And 2 weeks ago, one of the dads ordered some. So at the end of the last volume, a bunch of adults showed up, and that's how it ended. So this one is you going through the daily lives of these four adults who happen to be really good and, like, it'd be like us, like, really nice guys kind of thing. Or not me, maybe, but you guys. Just normal people. And so by the end of the issue, you're just like, oh, fuck, don't drive up. But you know exactly where they're heading to get those panels, and they show up, and all hell breaks loose. And one of the guys is basically, throughout this book, one of the storylines is him kind of on the run while these two little shitheads are kind of chasing him. And it's just a really cool, intense kind of story. And then there's other things going on, other parts of the story too, back at the camp. And this is definitely one of the top series that I've read. I don't know. I don't know if it started last year or the year before, but it's definitely one of my top picks for new series, and I hope it goes for a while.
I think it's a limited run they always intended to do.
Yeah, so I'm curious if the apocalypse is going to happen or not. I hope it doesn't.
So, Phil, did you just let the cat out of the bag? We now know that Kevin delivers solar panels. Is that his day job? You've been rumbled, Kevin. Your long-kept secret is now out.
Free electricity. We need them here in
Canada.
Well, we like solar panels, even though it's dark, you know, often, and it rains.
Well, I'm sure you can install some nighttime panels as well.
Nighttime panels. It absorbs the night sky, the create energy. That northern lights is useful for something.
When you have that solar energy cranking, what else you been reading?
I think one that Phil also read. The one that's I'm mystified by the title. I'm like, is this supposed to be French or is this like?
Yeah, I have a little trouble too, so I'm waiting for you to say it.
Is it Roche Limit?
I always say it with an accent, so
or
I don't know
or Roche right. Roche. I don't know how to pronounce this. This is embarrassing. No, I just wonder if it's like a science term that people like made English, or if this is supposed to be a French word, because I've never heard anyone pronounce this word before.
Spell it.
R-O-C-H-E.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, anyways, that's what the title is.
That limit.
But it has like a, I guess it sucked me in with the solicit and the cover, because it says stuff like 2001 Space Odyssey and, you know, Blade Runner, and then it has, I don't know, the closest thing I can compare it to is, like, you know, the Manhattan Projects, how they have those really cool graphical covers. It's just like, it's almost like icons, and it's just like a missile or a bomb falling or something exploding or bullets going in someone's head, or it's just crazy stuff like that. Well, this one has like a picture of like a planet or something, and like little asteroids or little bits of something like supposedly penetrating this thing, and then there's another one and it's just sort of like dissolving away, and then they have like something coming from another bigger sphere on the back cover, and then that has sort of like a black cloud like with a line sort of emerging from there, and it says come find yourself. And then they have the title of the book, The Creators, and then they have like this guy with the similar circular thing. This isn't really working for anyone. But anyways, this guy is in like a spacesuit, and there's like a giant like cord. But it looks like more than a cord. Like, it looks like a giant thing attached to his back.
You know what? Just Google the image.
Yeah. It's real. I thought it was pretty striking cover anyways.
I just Googled Roche, and it's French for rock.
Rock limit.
Oh, no. But it's an actual science term, though. Know that.
So it's probably Roche limit.
It's a real thing, though. Like, when the things are in, like, the limits of, like, something orbits something else, like, I'm thinking, like, a planet or something. I only did a little bit of a Google search, because I was trying to find the, you know, the pronunciation, and they have these hilarious things on YouTube where people mispronounce and pronounce words properly, and sometimes the person giving you the pronunciation has an accent themselves. So you're like, you press play and it goes roar, and then you're like, what? And that goes roar again, and you're like, I can't pronounce that. You're just like totally confused, because then it's like, oh, this is how you pronounce the word in France. And I'm like, yeah, but is that the pronunciation of the word? Anyhow.
So how was the book?
So the book has this really cool prologue about all this high concept science stuff about what happened on Earth, and, you know, all the peons are on Earth, all the rich, cool people are in space, and then people are exploring outer space, and then, you know, they go, bad stuff goes on, so people get killed, and then you get this cool, like, diagram in the middle about the Roche Limit Colony, where there's some, like, anomaly in the Andromeda sector, and, like, they build this colony inside this dwarf planet that's as close to this anomaly as you can get, and then there's, like, this other smaller sphere beside that one, where they go mining there, and then the minerals that they mine there can create a drug called Recall. And at this point, I'm like, wow, this is really, really cool. I'm like, I'm really digging this. And then as it goes into, I guess, the Blade Runner part, where there's like a possible murder mystery, or at least a missing persons, so they go into what's going on this world that they built, the city where maybe 10,000 people are living inside this dwarf planet. So, you know, you're trying to track down the suspects. And my interest level keeps on declining as the issue goes on. So I'm just like, well, that's kind of weird. Like, how often do you read an issue where you're like, the first half, you're like, yeah, this is awesome. And then by the end of the issue, you're like, well, I didn't enjoy the second half, like, really as much as the first part. So I'm like, not quite sure, like, do I want to read a second issue? They're going to probably get back to the hard sci-fi concepts, but it's just weird to be confronted by something like that.
You've invested so much time and effort in the name alone already, you should at least pick up the second issue.
I guess so.
All right, I got one last one for us, and I guess it's to start the wheel turning and the ball rolling for next episode, where we'll have our 351st episode, but it'll be our 1 year anniversary of taking over Indie Comic Book Noise with our Halloween themed episode.
And our last episode?
Of the first year of us doing this, yes.
Oh, okay.
And so I've got a sort of a creepy book here, and yes, I know it's coming from me, and I keep harping on this creator as far as appreciating his work, but I've just discovered him over this last year, and it's great. I want to read everything he's put out, and that's Richard Salla. And that's not Rich Salla, the guy who we've heard about recently, who is kind of recreating like the old Warren magazine. And there's been some confusion over the fact that he was going by Richard Salla also. That is the guy's name, so I think he's trying to be sensitive to the confusion and going by Rich Salla. That guy's style is much, 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 much different and not quite as sophisticatedly refined as far as having the years of experience that Richard Salla's been. He's been doing this for 25 years in print. And this is Delphine. And it is a graphic novel, but I say that because it's a 122-page story, so it's a good chunk of book there. And it is a typical Salla-esque intro setup, and you'll recognize this type of setup, Andrew, from the book that we read a few months ago by Salla. And a person comes to a weird little off-the-map type town and encounters all sorts of visually interesting folks and suspicious activity, and has to try to figure out what's what and survive. And this time it's a college-age guy, and he's searching for a girl that he connected with, Delphine, in college, who left school to go take care of her sick father, and then was going to return, but she never came back. And she had cryptically said, like, a few things as they were, like, hugging and embracing, like, you know, what if I never come back? And he's like, well, but you aren't coming back, right? And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah, and she doesn't. So now he's off trying to find her. The chapters are broken up with full-color title pages and then like a splash page that is kind of metaphorical or symbolic of kind of the story getting deeper and deeper. Like a few chapters in, one of the images is Delphine like really entangled in the woods, like the tree woods, sort of, you know, showing how she's kind of getting further and further away from him. But otherwise, the book is like sepia toned. It's the black and white line work, but it's got a little tan in there. And Sala works wonders with color, and even just with this one color, it just really looks classy. And it really is just another notch of his work. I like his just black and white work, but his color work is just exponentially more entertaining to me as far as being able to set his tone and giving his figures more form and depth to them. He gets marooned in haunted woods. There's a mysterious old hermit woodsman, a cabal of witches, carnivorous mazes, or cavernous, I should say. There's various leads that he has to follow up on, and there's a heavy dose of lycanthropy before you realize that you're reading a tale that's kind of a take on Sleeping Beauty, and it's told from Prince Charming character's point of view. Really good tone. Like I said, the colors really give it a good atmosphere. The pacing is all really suspenseful. That's what Sala's all about. Intriguing clues, really creepy people that you just come upon and they give you a face and it's like, wah! I mean, you're lucky if they're people. The list price is a little high. It's $25 for the 122-page story, but I think on digitally it was like $20, and I see it for sale every now and again. Definitely worth the read. I enjoyed it as much as my favorite of his works.
He's Fantagraphics, Steve?
Yes,
or what
yes
was
he is Fantagraphics, exactly.
Yeah, I enjoy that stuff, but I'm much prefer print when I can. I've already got tons of cruddy digital comics.
That digital one that he had been doing for free on his Tumblr and the page every once, that just came out in print in a glass grotesquely. And it's got that web strip that he did for free, also a few other stories in there. And I bought the print copy even after reading it digitally, just because I really like... Every one of his books has like a different size and a different feel to it, and it's always on good paper, so worth checking out.
I have to finish up season one of Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated. That's going to get me in the mood.
Yeah, it gets me in the mood because Daphne is cute in it. it was Daphne, Batgirl, and Jean Grey with that red hair when I was a kid. And Red Sonja. Mm. Oh, man.
Black Widow?
My redheads as a kid, of course. All right, gang. That's Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 350. Facebook page, Twitter.
In holiday tradition.
IndieComicBookNoise.com, Facebook page, Twitter, all that. Come back for the anniversary episode next time.
A lot of Halloween.
I wanted to thank everyone, whether you've been listening for one episode or 349. We appreciate you taking the time to invite us into your headspace for a little bit.
And, yeah, if someone's been listening for 349, we want to hear from them.
Yeah, go ahead and tweet at us, or you can always leave an iTunes review or anything you want. We're here for you, people, and thanks again.
All right, draw some teddy bears, then go read some indie comics.
Later.
his side. He saw his law was broken, the punishment was applied.